It's time for Caffeinated Comics, a lively discussion and debate on comics, film, television, and collectibles, all fueled by the magic of Frappuccinos. Caffeinated Comics is sponsored by Chimeras Comics. Chimeras is your one stop for comic books, graphic novels, hero clicks, Magic the Gathering, and more. Explore the fantastic at Chimeras Comics. Now, here's your hosts, John and Steven.
This is Caffeinated Comics. I am your host, John Clark. With me, as always, is my co-host, Steven Brown. And we have, this is a very special episode because we have frequent Skype guest and never studio guest, Bill Monroe.
Hey, it's great to be here, finally.
He brought his own microphone.
In real life.
I did. I carry my own gear.
Yeah. And Joe Pakovitz, comic book historian, is here.
Hello, hello.
He says he's not going to say much, but we'll see how well that works. We are not drinking coffee. We're drinking Jim Beam Devil's Cut.
No, because the sun went down.
The sun went down and the zombies are out. Mm. And that's...
It looks a little like weak coffee.
That sounds exactly like when Jimmy was here, we all did Mr. T at the same time.
People!
But Walking Dead is coming back tomorrow. Halloween is 2 weeks away. So this is the zombie cast.
The zombie cast.
The zombie cast. Mm. So all things zombie. Now, Bill has let me know before we went on the air that you are in season 3.
Right. Yeah, I'm at the point. Walking Dead. I've just really started getting a few episodes into season 3, and I really like what's happening now. It looks like the two women have just met the governor and moved into that town, and folks look like they're getting settled in at the prison. So I think that governor seems like a nice guy. It looks like things are about to turn around. I know Lori is just about ready to have her baby, so I think I think things are finally looking up, and Rick and company are finally getting a break, so I'm excited to see what happens next.
Oh yeah, everything's gonna be fine now.
This is on no one else is Netflix gonna die now, right?
I think season 3 is now on Netflix. But these are still in your DVR.
Yeah,
aren't they?
Still on my TiVo. I'm still still plowing through them on my TiVo.
There Although you can Netflix them on the laptop.
I can. I may have to give that a shot.
Yeah. So we're going to be relatively spoiler free. We're not going to talk too much about Walking Dead. What I want to do is kind of cover the whole genre, because when I was growing up, zombies were really one movie. Like, most of the kids I know didn't know about Night of the Living Dead, so people didn't even say zombie to me. People said, oh, it's like Dawn of the Dead. Have you seen Dawn of the Dead? You know, oh, I'm Dawn of the Dead. It was all just so focused on that one. So it seemed like this just weird original idea. And now we're at a point where there are zombies on the cartoons that Ben watches.
Yeah.
So, like, people know more about zombies than they do about vampires.
Well, I think what's happening is I've caught an analysis at one point that really tied the rise and fall of zombies and vampires. They really work in a cycle where we're really on a downtrend on vampires right now, and zombies are on the uptrend. Twilight is the exception because they're not actually vampires. But what you generally find is that when the country is feeling pretty darn good about itself, you see people aspiring to the more long-term immortality and the potential grandeur and wealth of the vampire that we saw in the 90s and the early part of the 2000s and even in the 80s. When you look back to where zombies were really starting to become popular, it was the 70s and the malaise of the 70s. And now with the current economy, I think that's led into the current rise of the zombies.
Yeah. I hope the place you read that was my blog from 5 years ago.
Was it on your blog?
Yeah, because I wrote
it's entirely possible.
I wrote it as an article and I'm like, wow, that guy agrees with me.
You know,
but you always see that in the 80s, there's Day of the Dead. But the 80s are this weird period of like crazy prosperity for some and just horribleness for others. So there was that weird dichotomy of the Reagan era. So that could kind of bubble through, but it wasn't this huge explosion.
Right. And in the 80s, that was where we saw the modern vampire rise. And that was what Anne Rice gave us with Interview with the Vampire.
And The Lost Boys is right around that time.
Yeah, Lost Boys is right around. Like, and Buffy gets its start in the 80s as well.
Well, early 90s. Early
90s, but yeah.
Yeah, you have that. The vampires are all about self. So the vampires are always like, I'm going to live forever, and I'm going to bite hot women, and I'm going to turn into a bat, and nobody's going to see me. Zombies are like, the world is fucked.
That's what I'm saying.
And so everybody is out to get me.
The world is in such like a... It's like, all right, so the economy is doing terrible, the housing market and all this other crap, all these bubbles are bursting everywhere. It's like, so because the world's kind of going to shit and we're talking about invading all these other countries, people want the extreme of what that looks like. They want that escapism. It's like, oh, at least it's not zombies knocking down your door. It's just the bank knocking down your door, you know, taking your house. It's like,
or
it's a little different.
Sadly enough, anticipating the zombies coming next. And,
yeah.
And,
sadly enough, people from the bank act like zombies. They're like, Fisco, look at your contract you signed. Let us in.
Well, they don't ask for permission like vampires. That's a thing still with vampires, where they have to ask permission to get
in
your house?
I think so. I think that's weird.
That's strange.
They're like, can I come in? Because they're like, if you let them in your house once, they come in whenever they want and bite you.
No, that's the rule?
Yeah, but
It depends, because in the being human canon, you can actually revoke permission for a vampire to come in.
Oh, that's good. Because I was thinking about that. It's like, if I've invited you three over, right?
Yeah.
Now, a month from now, if you come in and steal all my stuff, you can't say, well, you invited me.
Well, vampires can still be charged with theft.
Yeah, it's hard to hold a vampire,
it's
though.
It's just trespassing.
Yeah. Sure. You got to keep them in solitary all the time.
Well, how about this? How about you invited us all in tonight, and then next week I get bit and turn into a vampire. Can I come in, or do I need your permission?
No, because you're not Steven anymore. You're dead, and you're like undead vampire Steven, so you're a totally different guy.
Count.
Yeah, it doesn't count.
That's interesting.
So you show up all pale with like weird red eyes, and you're like, it's time to do the podcast, John.
And I'm like, and it's like 10 o'clock at night. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And you're hovering over my second floor window.
Right.
Like in Salem's lot. And I'm like, no. I was like,
the podcast,
you know,
is over.
Dave Redfield's going to be in for a while. You go float around. But yeah, zombies have no rules. It seems like the only accepted rule of zombies is kill the brain. That's the one rule I've seen in every zombie thing.
Yeah, so now the idea you're saying, and I don't know this, the origins of the zombie is from that first zombie movie in the 70s?
Well, there have always been zombies, but before Night of the Living Dead in the 60s, before the first George Romero, they're mostly like being possessed. They're like...
Right, yeah, and that goes back to the historical roots in Haiti and in the Caribbean, where, you know, possession among living people then became, all of a sudden the dead are now possessed. And they come after you.
Yeah.
Yeah, and possession is 9/10 of the law.
Yeah.
So that's pretty serious.
Been messing around with that.
But I think, I can't think of anything, Joe, you're a historian. I can't think of anything before Night of the Living Dead of the dead are rising out of their grave. They're not vampires. They have no minds, and they want to eat your body.
Invasion of the Body Snatchers is the only thing that I can think of.
But that's
the
body replacement. That's more of like a cloning type story.
Well, I think you're also dealing with... A canon there that just simply hadn't been fully developed. I mean, we see elements of the zombie story going back years. The whole idea of, you know, I mean, obviously vampires and zombies are both just two different elements of the how do you come back from the dead? After your life is over, what's next? And how can we get around that? And two different interpretations of that. But I think you start to see a little bit of that. I mean, there's an element of zombie in Frankenstein's monster.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I always said Frankenstein is just a zombie with a lot of work done.
Yeah,
the
designer zombie.
Designer zombie, yeah.
Yeah, the other zombies talk behind his back.
Right.
They're like, so fake, you can see the bolts.
But I think what's especially interesting about zombies, at least now, is it's, like you said, it's in cartoons that Ben's watching. It's like everyone is either watching The Walking Dead, they're reading the comic, they're going to see World War Z, they're reading World War Z, the book. I mean, it's so much... More recently, it seems, where it's like the new, you know, super popular like subculture of like horror genre that's really kind of taking off.
Yeah, and Walking Dead even took AMC by surprise, because at that point, in terms of ratings, Mad Men was getting about 3 million. I think Breaking Bad was about 2 million. They ended at 10 million, but they built through their final season. When Walking Dead premiered, it was 6 million, and they could not believe it. They had never seen 6 million people watch their channel ever.
Yeah.
Wow. They did not have 6 million people watching Fright Fest.
Yeah.
I have no idea what that is.
Only when they just show Universal Monster movies and all month of October.
That's kind of zombie-ish.
Yeah, they would show zombies in there.
Yeah.
But they didn't have 6 million people watching.
They didn't have 6 million people watching. No.
And nobody could believe how big a hit it was. Walking Dead is... How is Walking Dead like compared to Batman? Because we know Batman's the number one book in the show.
Walking Dead's, I would say it's... We used to say it was the best-selling indie comic in the store. But you can't be the best-selling indie comic in the store when you have a million-dollar TV show behind you.
It's the best-selling non-Marvel or DC, is what
absolutely,
I mean.
Or
non-superhero. Yeah.
Right, right. You know, it sells better than Superman. It sells better, you know, than you know, some of the like second or third tier Marvel books, like maybe some of the X-Men books that don't sell as well. I mean, I think it's actually kind of close to what we're doing on Superior Spider-Man.
Okay, and Superior Spider-Man is the number one Marvel book.
It's our number one non-Marvel crossover book. Okay. So typically the crossovers do better, but it's the best ongoing monthly.
Right, ongoing. I'm not counting an event.
Right, but the weird thing is everyone who, excuse me, everyone who talks about The Walking Dead or comes in, they're a fan of the show, says, oh, I heard it's, you know, do you have that comic that's based on the show? Right. And then the first thing is, no, it's the show is based on the comic. Right. And then they'll say, oh, okay. And then you show them and it's, oh, you explain it's black and white, blah, blah, blah. It's pretty, you know, follows the show pretty closely. But then you tell them, oh, this has been around for 10 years. And they're like, what? How have I not heard of this? It's like, well, they didn't make a $1 million TV show out of it. That's how you haven't heard of it. It's like, but yeah, it's really something very recently that took off.
And the trades are like the best selling trades, aren't they?
Yeah, when we get like a new Batman trade in, we get like two or three, depending on who wrote it or, you know, how many special orders we have. When we get a Walking Dead one in, we're doing easily 10 or 12.
Yeah, if it's five in trades, it's five times the amount of your best selling book.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, that's
so
huge.
Yeah, it's enormous. And like I said, because it's so serialized, because it's, I don't know if you guys read it month to month. Walking Dead, month to month, not a lot happens. You really do kind of need to read the trade to get like a bigger story. And he's writing for the trade because the trades outsell. They're always in the top 10 trade sales every month.
Yeah, I gave up the monthly, and I don't even read the trades. I read the hardcovers, which come out once a year.
Yep.
The trades come out every 6 months, and then the hardcover is two trades put together.
Yeah.
So I just get the hardcovers every, and I read it once a year, and it's a fast read. It takes me like 45
There's
minutes
not much
to read
it.
12 issues.
Yeah. Lots of pictures.
A lot of pictures.
A lot of people staring, and then they say four words.
Right.
And then they stare some more. And when the zombies show up, zombies aren't saying anything.
Right. Yeah, there's not a lot of dialogue with zombies.
Not even a lot of sound effects.
It's too. It's interesting.
It's not like crunch, bite,
kapow,
swallow,
zowie,
snicked.
But something like The Walking Dead, even at this point, you know, it's been going on. It's on like an issue like 115, 117, something like that, I think is the newest issue. And they just started that, their big storyline for the year. It's like the war or whatever. They're doing like a big war with all these different communities. But it's the book, I would say, like, it's been a minute before the zombies have been the threat in the book. Where it's called The Walking Dead, it's about zombies, but the real threat is the other humans.
And you can say the same thing about the show.
I was going to say, I think that's one of the things that's one of the threads that really comes through in World War Z in the novel as well.
Yeah.
In that it's a lot, yes, obviously the zombies are an omnipresent threat, but it's what happens around that. How do people deal with the collapse of civilization and what comes out of people? And what
28 Days Later explored that same theory.
Yeah.
Right. 28 Days Later, they're not technically zombies. They're more like, they're more having like crazy panic attacks from a disease. Or you know what? I think The Road is like that.
Yeah.
The Road has no zombies, but it's like...
It's very similar to The Walking Dead, though.
It could be The Walking Dead if it had zombies. Like
it's Road, like The Walking Dead after a really hot summer, where like you were saying, it's like all the zombies have decomposed. They're all dead, extra dead.
Yeah.
And it's now you're left with in a world where... There is no infrastructure.
There you go.
Like a movie trailer.
That sounded just like him.
But I think that was one of my favorite things in Walking Dead was they showed winter, which they've never done on the show, and the zombies were all kind of frozen the ground.
Yeah.
So as they would walk by, and I was like, and they just kind of like forgot about them for a couple of months.
Yeah.
They were like, oh, these guys aren't getting up. And then spring came, and the zombies thawed.
Right. And it's like, so there's interesting things like that, but yeah, I think that's a valid point is, you know, like you said, it's the zombies cause the big downfall of society, but then it's really, it's the other people, how people handle, I mean, it's all filters shut off. I mean, people, you can just get away with anything. Like there's no rules.
Yeah. And it's also the survivalist. I mean, Zombie Survival Guide is really a textbook. It's not a fantasy at all. It's
got a little humor in it, but it pretty much reads like a VCR manual.
Yeah, and it's Max Brooks who's Mel Brooks' son. So if it had no sense of humor in it, I would wonder how this kid grew up.
I didn't even realize they were related.
Yeah, isn't that wild?
I found out. I think Mel Brooks was on The Nerdist WTF, and he was talking about his son's book. Yeah,
yeah. Now, unfortunately, Lisa and Tina aren't here for this, but they went to.
They
go
said
see...
maybe, and now maybe hasn't happened.
Yeah, maybe in the future. They went to a talk by Max Brooks. He was doing like a book signing. They talked to him and he was saying a lot of what came out of like World War Z and a lot of what came out of the Zombie Survival Guide for writing was he took the inspiration of how the government tried to cover up like the AIDS epidemic in the 80s where they were like they weren't talking about it. There was a lot of misinformation about it, and he used that as a response, and this is how that was what he based the government's response on if there was a zombie outbreak. Because I think one of the people in the crowd asked a question like, well, how would it get started? And he's like, well, you know, it would be like, imagine if a lot of people were getting infected with a disease and the government wasn't talking about it and the government wasn't telling anybody or giving any information about it. They weren't talking about it in the news. He's like, it's not like there's precedent for anything like that. And then, you know, kind of made a joke out of it. Mm-hmm. But I think that's a lot of it is, you know, we wouldn't know how to react, I don't think, to something
that's
like that.
That's a lot of Shaun of the Dead, too, which
yeah.
which I think is one of the best zombie movies ever, even that's though it's a comedy.
Yeah.
It's not a parody of zombie movies either. And it always bothered me because in Act 3, when the zombies break through and they kill Dylan Moran, who was on Black Book,
yeah.
that always really bothered me because it kept it at like a comedy level. And I'm like, this is a comedy. And then they pull him apart.
And
I'm
kill
like,
him, yeah.
I'm like, wait a minute. I was like, you set that up in Act 1 if you're going this far.
Right.
Right.
And then I've seen enough zombie movies where I've forgiven it.
Yeah. Yeah, I've always liked that one just because I do kind of, you know, you enjoy how different people like to handle the zombie apocalypse. And it was nice to see like a humorous take, but also
they're ignoring it because
right.
the first half an hour, there's constant like, there's attacks happening right around him. There's things on the news. There's fire engines going by. But he's like just so wrapped up in his problems with his girlfriend.
Right.
He's just not listening to any of it until his roommate is a naked zombie.
Right.
And there's
right.
people in the backyard banging on it. And then he's totally not prepared. Which that's how a lot of the population
life
get wiped out.
Yeah, yeah, I mean,
you know, I think you see that in a lot of the music too. I know Kirby Crackle has a song about about the zombie attack, and you know, he really just
Jonathan
wants to sit there and play with his video games. And
Jonathan Colton,
R.E.
Your Brains
is an awesome song, and you see that in concert.
It's the zombies pleading with the people to come out so they can just eat them.
Yeah, but I think that makes sense. It would be a slow burn to build up to everything going crazy. Like, it'd be a little incident here and there. And I mean, that's why people were freaking out when that guy in Florida was chewing that other guy's face off
right on bath salts.
Right on the bath salts, because it's like, this is the shit. This is how it starts, man. And like, no one pays attention to it, or like, no one cares or gives it any mind. And then that's how it starts.
So it could be going on right now.
It could be starting right now.
We could be the last four people alive,
for all we know.
Yeah, my wife took the boys out. They could be gone.
They could be zombie food right now.
That's going to hurt our download numbers.
That will hurt.
Yeah. They might not.
Depending on our...
Might say exactly the same.
Far spread out.
Well, this is a question for Steve. Do you see any bleed over into other horror titles or anything like that? Because usually the first thing when something like that takes off is everybody tries to shamelessly rip it off.
You do see the amount of other indie books trying to spoof zombie comics or come out with their own version of zombie comics is ridiculous. And we have a lot of people come in, oh, do you have anything like The Walking Dead? Oh, yeah, here's The Walking Dead. Well, is there anything else like it? Like, there's 100 things like it. They're all garbage, so we don't carry them. The closest we were carrying, we had a guy subscribing to this book called Crossed, which was kind of like a zombie story where these guys, I don't know how you get infected, but you get like a burned like cross in your face. And then you go nuts and turn into like a scumbag murdering rapist thing.
With a cross on his face.
With a cross on his face.
That's subtle.
And then,
somebody didn't like the cap.
Garth Ennis was writing this, I think.
So that's subtle.
Yeah. And we stopped ordering it when one of the main villain with like the thing on his face murdered somebody by beating him to death with a horse penis. And that's kind of like... There's only so much I need to see in comics, and there's a line.
That seems eminently impractical.
And was the book selling? Did you have...
It wasn't selling well.
So it wasn't like you weren't telling members, you can't buy this book from me anymore.
No,
it was like, it's not selling, and there's horse penises killing people.
You mean there's not a huge horse penis fan group in LaGrange, Illinois?
Right.
Just go online, I'm sure they're...
somewhere.
So that book started a war on two fronts with you.
Right.
It didn't sell, and horse penis.
And the guy who was subscribing to it dropped off, you know, and left me with 6 months of those books, which I can't sell because it's a guy killing another guy with a horse penis.
You should just put in the sets in the front and put warning horse penis.
The kids will love that.
Actually, that should be your category for any book you don't like. This book is a horse penis.
That's not bad.
Just put a big band sticker on it and it'll sell.
Yeah. That's the new Jump the Shark.
Right.
Yeah. It's going really well until the horse penis showed up.
Mm-hmm.
Really? In Thor? Yes.
Yeah.
He had to fight a horse. The horse was fully erect.
But even think they did, like Marvel. Marvel hired Kirkman. Walking Dead was doing so well, Marvel hired Kirkman. Mm-hmm. And he wrote Ultimate X-Men and a number of other projects. And then did a Marvel Zombies. And they did a sequel after sequel after sequel and beat that to death.
Yeah, they had like five or six of those zombie series.
Yeah.
And it was clever for a while. And eventually they had to... Eventually, when Disney bought them, mm-hmm. Disney put the kibosh on it. Because they saw a product of like... Spider-Man zombie, Wolverine zombie, and like they were really gory.
Yeah.
And Disney's like, you are not putting out our flagship characters like this. Stop it. And that's only when it ended. It just continued to sell.
That's really the only time I can think of Disney stepping in and kind of saying, all right, Marvel, rein it in because you're going kind of crazy. But yeah, you're right. That might as well have been, from when it started to when it ended, that might as well have been an ongoing monthly. Because the one series would wrap up, then they do another one, then they do another one, and they just kept Marvel Zombies 2, Marvel Zombies 3, and they got...
It was up to five at least.
It was. They did five or six, and then they did a couple like miniseries that weren't numbered. But it got to the point where it's like, all right, we killed all the X-Men zombies, we killed the Spider-Man zombie, we killed the Green Goblin zombie. Then it's like, here's... Supreme Power, the zombie universe. And it's like, so it's a ripoff of the Justice League in Marvel as zombies.
Yeah, because everybody was already zombified.
My Little Zombie Pony.
Yeah, and it's like, they have like Jack of Hearts running around as a zombie on the cover.
Start going to the Zony conferences.
Yeah, there you go.
Peter Parker, the Spectacular Spider-Ham Zombie.
Yep. And it's like, they ran out of characters.
I will say, Volume 1, the best thing about it, and if I'm remembering it wrong, then I have the good idea, so I don't care. Was I remember in the first one they all turned into zombies and they're all like kind of like late 60s, early 70s, like it's early.
Luke Cage is in the tiara and the blouse.
Yeah, Iron Man has like the horn head armor.
Yeah,
but like Galactus comes to eat the Earth because it's right around that time, and then the zombies just eat Galactus.
Yeah, and then they all get cosmic superpowers.
Yeah, that was kind of cool.
Yeah.
So back in the 70s or 80s, did you see any of the Marvel or even the DC groups, the Justice League, the X-Men, the Avengers, ever fighting zombies? I seem to recall zombies popping up from time to time, but
what happened was the copyrights for those became public domain, and then all of a sudden you saw Dracula, the comic book, Frankenstein.
This was Marvel's like horror imprint stuff. And
it's also when the Comics Code lifted some of the restrictions, because in the 60s they couldn't have any kind of monsters, because the Comics Code, part of it was just to squash out people like EC and
who
were doing Tales from the Crypt. Yeah. So there were no... And then when they lifted it a little bit, immediately in the 70s, you see Ghost Rider is the one that stuck. But there was the Werewolf by Night, the Living Zombie,
Dracula. Giant-sized man thing.
Yep.
Morbius, yeah.
Frankenstein had a book. Morbius was a part of that. Blade comes out.
Yeah.
There was that whole horror movement. And I think there was... Wasn't there a character called Carrion in Spider-Man?
Yeah.
Who's basically a zombie. He was like a floating zombie.
He's kind of like the 90s, I want to see. He was like a Maximum Carnage villain.
Yeah.
But then now they did do...
And Marvel always does stories where like a town is taken over and they act like zombies.
Yeah.
And, you know, because it's always like, I can't hurt these people because they're innocent as they're punching them right in the skull.
I remember seeing episodes of Super Friends where they, like, one of the Legion of Doom's plans was like, let's get an army of zombies. Mm-hmm. And they were like super strong and they could like go toe-to-toe with Superman.
And it was one zombie drawn 20 times.
Right. Yep. And it's like, you know, they couldn't show any violence, so like Superman would just kind of like pick a zombie up and like walk off screen with it, and it's like, yeah, he took care of it. You know, but it's like they couldn't
he got it out of there. It wasn't coming back.
But they do like 30 episodes and it's they can't have anyone throwing a punch, so Batman will be like, I'm gonna tie you up with a rope, and then Solomon Grundy's like, okay. And it's like, because I'm not super
you
strong.
Win.
Nope, you got me.
Solomon Grundy ain't brought no rope.
Right.
Well, yeah, and they also couldn't even say anything. They couldn't insult them, which is why every single villain goes, I will destroy you, super fools.
Right.
And they always laugh like they're the only one that ever thought of that. It's like the Hanna-Barbera Fantastic Four cartoon. My favorite part of it is every episode has one of the classic villains, but they all come up with the same insult, and they all laugh out loud with it. Whenever they announce their plan, they go, and then the Fantastic Four will be no more. And I'm like, dude, Dr. Doom totally came up with that joke last week, Claw.
Yeah.
You're a hack, Claw.
Yeah, they're biting on his riff.
Right. But yeah, I think it's enough to where it's kind of always been there. But especially now, I think the zombie seems to just be like kind of everywhere.
I think Walking Dead is a tipping point because we've never had a zombie TV show before. And zombie movies... Part of the reason there's always zombie movies is they're the cheapest ones to make, because all you really have to do is paint a bunch of people.
Yeah.
If you even do that, like if you paint them white, or Dawn of the Dead painted them all blue.
I remember seeing
and
the blue.
And give them ripped up clothes.
And then just send them out. It's like vampires, you got to give them all teeth, and werewolves, you got to give them fur.
And there's effects, they got to transform.
Yeah. Or like in She, where they're vampires that look like werewolves.
They look like werewolves, and Robin Williams.
And Frankenstein comes out of a box. There is a movie called She that is streaming on Netflix that Bill and I watched when we were in Seattle that makes no goddamn sense.
Is it store appropriate?
It
might be. I don't recall any nudity
or any cursing.
No. It is
no
just,
horse penises.
No.
It is insane. The best way to sum it up is the first 5 minutes. It's like supposed. It's this post-apocalyptic future where she's like Sheena the She-Devil. Like she's like the one warrior left.
Yeah.
And she goes in this cave that has like the remnants of society. It's like a Mad Max world. And then all of a sudden, out of a crate, Frankenstein jumps out and starts fighting her. Things like that happen all through that movie.
Yeah.
And there's no reason for it to be Frankenstein.
They don't explain.
They never explain.
And it just goes away. And after that, it's not like Frankenstein appears again later.
Mm-hmm. Right. He's not a reoccurring character.
No, it's not a riff on the Frankenstein model.
Right.
Is this a new movie?
Like, no, it's 80s.
No, it's
how
the
has
80s.
This not appeared on MST3K?
I don't know.
This
that ruined us, too, because anytime I visit Seattle or Bill comes here to Chicago, or even when I lived in New York, we always try to look for the worst movies we can find.
Yeah.
So when he was here last time, we watched The Room and Birdemic and Troll 2 all night long.
It was a rough night.
It was a rough night. And we weren't drinking.
No.
That makes it even
How'd
worse.
You make it through without drinking?
A lot of conversation of, why is this happening?
Right.
What the hell?
A lot more sober conversation than should be.
Yeah, there was no answer to that, so we could just keep going. Maybe.
I mean, The Room itself fell apart on its own merits. That was bad. But Birdemic, you could see they really thought they were trying to do a good movie, and they couldn't even focus it.
Yeah.
I mean, not like in terms of story and plot. I mean, literally in focus.
They couldn't keep the camera
focused.
Like Plan 9 from Outer Space, you see the boom come down.
Yeah. Birdemic has one animating JPEG of a bird flapping its wings.
And they just use it over
and they just
and
cut
over
and paste
again.
All over the screen.
Well, they learn from Super Friends.
Ed Wood lives.
Yeah. It's like the one zombie.
It makes Hanna-Barbera look HD.
Yeah.
Well, that reminds me of, did you ever see Return of the Living Dead in the 80s?
No.
That movie was nuts. Now, I ended up buying it. Like, when Walking Dead Season 1 came
out,
I was in a real zombie mood after that first season is so good. And, I mean, we can get more into depth, but I've always said the pilot of The Walking Dead is the best zombie movie I have ever seen. And the biggest problem with The Walking Dead is it just can't reach that height ever again. But after I saw that first season, I just wanted to buy everything. And I'm like, I remember not even HBO, WHT. If you you'd get that one.
Metco Home Theater.
Yes.
Which, in terms of completely random tangents, once we got rid of the WHT box and WHT went out of business, we still had the antenna on our roof, which pointed to channel 68, which was then unscrambled and became U68, the free music video channel, back in like 1985, 1986 in Queens. And it was awesome.
Did you guys have that out here?
No.
No.
Yeah, I don't even think it got to the Midwest.
I've never heard of that.
WHT was HBO, but it wasn't cable. Like, you paid for them to put a cable into your television that was WHT. And then the craziest thing about it was you would go to, like, Channel 3 or UHF. You would turn on the descrambler box, and the descrambler box had a speaker in it.
Right.
So you would get your volume from the cable box, not from your TV. So you'd have to turn down your TV because your volume on your TV was promoting WHT 24 hours a day.
Oh, wow.
So you'd be watching the Muppet movie, and if you didn't have the volume on, it would be going, watch the Muppet movie on WHT, followed by Popeye with Robin Williams.
Wow.
And so what killed them was when VCRs came out, and you were like, Star Wars is on WHT. And then you taped it, and it was 2 hours of like, Star Wars, the movie from George Lucas, is on WHT. And that was the end of them. But they used to show this movie, Return of the Living Dead, which I found out later was bad on purpose. Because it was written by the guys who created Alien, and they were trying to do like a goofy creep show thing. But it's nuts, because it's a cheap little movie where they're trapped in the mortuary of a cemetery. And, like, while they're in the cemetery, everybody comes out of the grave.
That's a very bad place to go during a zombie apocalypse.
Yeah. Well, the kids were hanging out in the graveyard partying, and the one girl strips naked to dance on the grave. And then she gets bitten by a zombie, so now she's a naked zombie. And when you're 14, there's no way you're turning off a naked zombie at 11 o'clock at night. I saw this movie like 5 times.
Is this the one with like the tar monster?
Yes. You had the figure in the store.
We had an action figure that in the store. I've seen this movie.
The tar monster, he was like a guy that melted and turned into a zombie.
Yeah.
And
does that explain the death of Tasha Yar?
Yes, it killed her.
She was killed by a zombie.
It laid into a pool and then sucked her.
Star Trek zombies.
Season 1 of TNG was. They had a zombie episode.
But my favorite thing about it, I ended up buying a Blu-ray, like I said, after Walking Dead Season 1. It was like the same frame of mind that got me to buy the Rankin-Bass Hobbit after the Fellowship of the Ring was out in theaters. I was like, I need more of this. I don't care if it's not good.
Stu loves that movie.
The animated Lord of the Rings.
He watches that shit all the time.
Crazy. But the thing about The Return of the Living Dead is the zombies are always screaming.
Yeah.
They're not going, eh. They're going, ah! And there's 30 of them. So it's always somebody gets out of a cop car. What's going on here? And then 30 people go, ah! And then just knock them to the floor.
That sounds like a Monty Python sketch.
How do they sneak up? Yeah. How do they sneak up on anybody then?
They're running zombies.
Oh, okay.
So running zombies predate the Dawn of the Dead remake.
Okay.
So they're zombies that breathe.
Well, and they say they interview a zombie. And they say, why are you eating people and why are you screaming? And the zombie, who's a puppet, the zombie said, it hurts to be dead. And when you eat people, it doesn't hurt so much.
Well, that kind of makes sense.
Oh, that's logical. I'll buy that.
It's almost sympathetic until the screaming begins again.
Yeah. Well, that's like they tried to show in, and I think this is probably in the, I don't know where I get this at this point. It's probably the survival guide. They talk about that's why there's that the rattly moan that the zombies always have is it's like they're probably in pain from being dead, but then they also talk about how it's like psychological because the zombies are never going to go to sleep. So if you've got a bunch of zombies outside your house, you can't sleep because all you hear is this like horrifying like sound.
Well, yeah, it's scratching.
I don't want zombie neighbors.
No. And I think that's kind of interesting. Is like it's a completely different problem that anyone's used to dealing with,
right?
But it's like you said, it's more than just I'm in physical danger. Like this is psychologically like horrifying.
Yep. And it's a zombie always ends up to be somebody you know.
Yeah,
you know, in Shaun of the Dead it's the roommate, in Walking Dead the pilot it's the wife,
right?
You know, so there is that, so there's that wearing down.
Yep. Should he have shot the wife in the pilot?
Oh yes. Well, because damn it, you didn't finish season. And you haven't read the comic.
Okay.
Yes, he should have shot his wife. Move on.
We were talking about it, you know, because my roommates are getting into it. They're watching Netflix. And I've read all the comics, so I'm further ahead, but it's different enough to where you don't kind of.
Well, they verge so much. I mean,
they do.
They have killed off characters that are alive in the book now, and vice versa.
And they'll give injuries to different characters.
Yeah, so like the settings have been the same. So like the farm and the prison have been in the book, but a lot of stuff happens very differently.
And that's something we've always, or they were talking about, like, if I got bit by a zombie, like, would you kill me? I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, absolutely. Like, you would be dead. Like, I would just cut your head off, like, game over. There's no hope.
Kill you before you were dead.
Yeah, I'm just like, and then she's like, no, I'd wait till you turned. I'm like, are you serious? You'd wait until I, like, devolved into, like, this, like, slobbering mess. And she's like, well, I want to make sure, you know, it's for real. Like, you're really
you're already
turn.
Dead. Worst that happens is you desecrate a corpse, and really, who's going to prosecute then?
That's true.
The zombie apocalypse is going on. Nobody's going to say, what are you doing with this corpse? Yeah. Preserving my life. Good on you.
Well, it's like in Shaun of the Dead where he chains him up in the shed, you know?
Yeah, he still wants to hang out with
him. Right, hang out with his buddy. Yeah,
that movie is so good. I can't believe you didn't like World's End.
Yeah, I didn't.
I think you've got to give it another chance.
I'll watch it on DVD when it comes out.
I loved it. Yeah, I was talking to somebody about it, somebody who really liked it, and I was saying you didn't like it. And I think the problem was that you were waiting for the supernatural turn, and you're like, when are they going to get to the supernatural thing?
Yeah.
Whereas Renee didn't know it was supernatural. She thought it was a movie about, like, all these guys in their 40s that go to bars. And look, it's Simon Pegg and Martin Freeman and Nick Frost. Oh, I like all these guys.
Yeah.
So when it turned, she was like, holy fuck.
Yeah.
So I think that's why she loved it and you didn't, because you were like, all right, enough of these guys drinking beers.
I get it. Yeah.
Where are the aliens? So, yeah, watch it again, because it was the best movie I saw this summer.
I'll give it a go.
But the other thing about zombies, which, I don't know if this helps or hurts the genre, but zombies have always been traditionally the goriest monsters around.
Well, that's because zombies are all about fear and violence, as opposed to vampires, which are about desire and sex.
Right.
Yeah.
And yeah, so but do you think that helps?
A vampire is going to kill you, he's going to bite your neck, drain your blood. Mm-hmm. Zombie's going to kill you, he's going to rip you apart, tear out your intestines, eat all your internal organs.
Right. Eat you anywhere.
Yeah, so it's like,
there was a panel of The Walking Dead where a zombie, I forget who it was, so no spoilers. But a guy's swarmed by zombies, and one of them is eating his eyelid.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that.
Yeah, it was like pulling his upper eyelid. Yeah. They will eat anything.
But then again, that walking...
Except in Return of the Living Dead, where all they wanted was brains, and that's where brains comes from.
But then again, that one panel at C2E2, the Walking Dead panel, was the most hilarious thing we ever saw.
Oh, yeah, but that's because Shane was high.
I know. That was wonderful.
It was Shane and Laurie, and Shane was saying like really inappropriate things, and Laurie was blushing, and that was their entire C2E2 panel. And Joe was going, I have to start watching the show.
Have you started, Joe?
No.
I'll lend it to you.
Netflix.
You have a Blu-ray player.
Please
now,
do.
So I can lend you anything. Blu-ray.
Exactly.
For the last 2 years, Joe had a DVD player, and I'm like, you should watch this, and you can't take mine.
I have joined the 2000s now.
There you go.
Yay. But do you think the gore in zombie movies helps or hurts? Because I did not think they were going to be able to get Walking Dead on the air. I thought it was going to be sanitized, and it's like, no, it's full-blown zombie gore.
Yeah, I think it's twofold. It is full-blown with the gore and the zombies, but it's a very toned down from what they get away with in the comic. And I think there's certain things that have happened in the comic that we won't ever see in the show because it's the general audiences, I don't think, are going to tolerate some...
Well, also the black and white and the...
Yeah.
The art's not cartoony or stylized, but it's not photorealistic either.
Right.
So you don't have to show the detail. Well, like, if you filmed some of that stuff, it would be so much gorier in color.
Well, I think the whole point of a zombie movie, too, is unlike the vampire movies where... a lot more of it is about intimacy, as you talk about it being more about violence in the zombie movie. You don't even need the gore at all in most zombie movies. I mean, you can actually tell the story as a suspenseful story about the people and about what's happening to the people without ever seeing significant quantities of blood. Because theoretically, most of the zombies should be pretty much coagulated by the time that they're a problem. I think where Walking Dead is most likely to put itself at big risk is like in the pilot or episode 2 where the zombies converge on a horse. Because I think you can go ahead and tear apart people with no problems. But once you start doing that to animals, then I think you'll start to have more of a problem with the general audience. But I mean, the gore itself is an interesting element of the storytelling, but it's definitely not essential to, or at least what we've seen so far in The Walking Dead.
Right.
Yeah, that's interesting, too, because that's a rule that changes. Because I was watching one of the George Romero's, I think it's Survival of the Dead. It's one of the later ones that's not great. But there's a whole subplot of a scientist trying to get zombies to eat animals because they only eat humans. And then in Walking Dead, they're eating anything.
Yeah, what's the one where they're across the street from, a gun store, and they send, a dog out with, food. And
that's the Dawn of the Dead remake.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they leave the dog alone.
Same thing. They're not interested in eating animals.
Right.
And I think, that's what's the problem, I guess, with, the zombies, is you run into rules about, what do they eat, what don't they eat, how do they eat, how do they discern, from trying to eat each other versus trying to eat humans? Do they run? Can they walk? Do they stumble around? Can they climb a ladder? There's no clear
It also depends on what kind of movie you want to make. To Bill's point, kind of adding on to that, it's like, do you want to make a splatter fest like a slasher movie, or do you want it to be more suspenseful? Because sometimes the most scary movies are the ones where you don't see what's going on.
Oh, yeah.
It's what you
all
don't,
about the
it's what you what don't see that's so scary.
Well, yeah, we were David Tennant episode of Doctor Who, Night, I think it is, where he is on a shuttle that gets stranded on the
midnight,
diamond.
Yes.
Midnight.
On the Diamond Planet. You never see the enemies. You just hear the knock.
Mm-hmm. Has anybody seen one of my favorite zombie movies, which is supposed to be a vampire movie, and it's just kind of, it's like halfway.
We
talked about She. Has anyone ever seen The Last Man on Earth?
With Vincent Price?
Yes!
No.
Oh my God, this movie's, it's streaming on Netflix. You need to, it's the first movie I ever saw streaming on Netflix. I watched it in front of my computer because no mobile device had Netflix. But it's the original version of I Am Legend, the Will Smith movie, based on the novel by why am I blanking? The writer of from the Twilight Zone, Richard Matheson. Yeah. And in that one, they're supposedly vampires and not zombies, but they act like zombies.
Yeah.
And every night they just show up at his door, like you're saying, like the moaning. They show up at his door and knock on his door and just say his name all the time. And they're like, come out, Peter. I can't remember his name.
Is this before or after Omega Man?
This is before, this is 50s. Because Omega Man is also I Am Legend.
Yeah.
And Omega Man, well, we can start talking about Omega Man for the next 3 hours because that movie's batshit nuts.
Yeah.
You could only make that movie in the 70s.
Of course.
With
Charlton Heston. You have to have Charlton Heston.
I have it. I will lend it to you.
You gotta see it, Steve.
That movie's great. Before I get too off track. The great thing is Vincent Price is the last man in the world, so just fucking see it. Vincent Price is the last man on Earth.
Right.
And there's this constant narration where he's like, oh, I knew all these people. Now they're trying to get in my door. And they have the great twist in the book, which is never in any of the other versions, is that he decides to go around during the day and stake all the vampires he can find. And then the vampires are just scared shit of him. And they just have, they start telling the story about, like, there's this crazy guy who comes in when you're asleep and just starts staking you.
So it's almost like he's the bad guy.
Yeah, so they turn him into the bad guy, which you never see. Omega Man. Bill, have you, you've seen
Omega? I have not seen it.
Oh, my.
Oh, dude.
We might have to watch this after the podcast. Because right. it's, if you like Planet of the Apes, and I think everybody in this room likes the original Planet of the Apes.
I just watched that on Netflix.
Yes. I lent it to you a year ago, so I know mm-hmm. that's not your first screening.
Yep.
It's that Charlton Heston, you know, who's just like way too macho and pissed off at everybody.
Yeah.
And he's in his apartment on the fourth floor, and he's just looking down at zombies and just... cursing at them and just shooting them now and then.
And he's playing chess with a bust of Napoleon.
Yeah, he's so just... Yeah, he's like...
Crazy.
Yeah. And every now and then he just... and he's like, damn, zombies! And he just starts
shooting them. And then he hears the phone ringing and it's not ringing.
But then he finds these other people and they're total, like, early 70s. They're like hippies.
Oh, yeah.
And there's like a black big girl. Afro. And it's like... Yeah, it becomes like this race relations thing.
Yeah, wow.
Bizarre. And it's crazy. And the head zombie was like this news reporter who becomes like... Who becomes this evangelist.
Yeah.
It's... nuts.
Oh yeah,
things are nuts as soon as there is the concept of a head zombie.
Yeah, yes. I was gonna say, yeah. Like, what is that?
Because they're all talking.
Yeah,
yeah,
and they're all like, they all have this like bleach white skin. They kind of look like the mutants in the second Planet of the Apes, and it is one of those, like, there is something about the '70s. I think that we don't even have now. We have all these movies about the collapse of society, District 9, Elysium, zombie movies. You know. It seems like every month there's a movie about now society has collapsed. But in the '70s, it was just the most depressing way possible, where they would always kill off the main character.
Yeah.
It's like Soylent Green.
Right.
Yeah.
You ever see Soylent Green?
No.
Nope.
Oh. Have you seen Soylent Green?
Yes,
Joe?
I have seen Soylent Green. Another Heston classic.
Another Heston classic. Heston was like the Schwarzenegger of the '70s, but all his movies were depressing.
Right.
And like, apocalyptic.
Yeah, because, well, Schwarzenegger made all the apocalyptic movies, but then he muscled them back into positive futures.
Right.
He's like, I will punch you until you learn how to behave.
Yeah, Heston just failed.
He's like, I'm the running man. I will run faster than everyone, and then they will like me because I run. Yeah, every single movie. Total Recall. I will go to Mars and put air on Mars. He's like, it will not be a terrible future because I am making you be good.
Get you the chopper.
He's like, I'll punch you in the eardrums until you're a good future. Charlton Heston was always like, this world sucks. And then by the end of the movie, it's, this world has killed me. It's like the second Planet of the Apes where Charlton Heston ends. These are spoilers about 40-year-old movies. So I said it was going to be spoiler-free, and it's not.
Right. Screw you.
The second Planet of the Apes movie ends with Charlton Heston setting off a nuclear bomb and destroying the Planet of the Apes. Where he's just like, fuck you, apes.
So he blew it up.
Damn me, I blew it all to hell.
So here's an interesting idea.
Yeah.
Are the Borg zombie?
Yes.
They're future techno zombies.
They have their motivation, and they have this collaborative communication,
mm-hmm.
but it's still about a takeover of an individual.
I would say Borg are zombies because of First Contact, which has the structure of a zombie movie. It's entirely a zombie movie with they're taking over more and more of the ship. We're going through these dark tunnels.
We have to kill our own crew members.
We have to kill our own crew members because they've been turned. We can't get them back. We're turning against one another from the stress of the situation. It's a zombie movie in space, the way Alien is a haunted house movie in space. But before then, if you're just talking about the series, I would have said maybe not, because before then it was more about like the loss of self and an invading army. But okay. First Contact is a damn zombie movie.
But First Contact then also gives us the Borg Queen.
Yeah, well, they said that was the problem with that, because the problem with zombie movies is that they never have a satisfying ending, which is why Kirkman created The Walking Dead as a comic, because he said...
Yeah, kind of end.
Yeah, because nobody, except for maybe Shaun of the Dead, where it's like, there are no zombies now, and it's just the ones that are still here. Like, we're not turning into zombies anymore.
Right.
But usually it's just like, we focus on our main characters, the ones that survive the movie, go off into the sunset to try to find something else. And Kirkman's original idea for Walking Dead was... If none of these movies really end, why don't I use a form that doesn't end to tell a zombie story?
Okay.
So, which is why it's on 120, and which is why it was a television series and not a movie.
And then ultimately, the only way the zombie story can end is when everybody's turned.
Yeah.
Until everybody dies. When the zombies are all eradicated.
Yeah. First Contact, to avoid that, they said, okay, we need a center villain to talk to and to focus on, which is also the reason they created Locutus. It's like, we need somebody to talk to. You can't talk to a wall.
Right.
And in a zombie movie, you can't talk to the zombies. Yeah,
well, and that's why I think that the Cybermen in Doctor Who, and Bill, you're apparently a Doctor Who fan, the Cybermen don't really fit because, you know, they don't have that central person to talk to. That's why they, I think that they are not as effective as the Borg were.
They do have, okay. They do have,
they have ranks. A cyber leader, they but have a cyber leader. But there's no...
And in one of the Christmas specials, they had the human they were working with.
Yeah, but that was one show.
But that was the person you could talk to in that episode.
There's definitely less of a clear motivation around the Cybermen within Doctor Who. I mean, the Daleks have their motivation. Right. The Borg have their motivation.
Daleks' motivation is, we hate everything!
And it's like, well, that's a motivation.
That's a motivation. Yeah. I'm like, okay. Yeah,
they are unshakable from that motivation.
I got it. They've been tortured themselves to pass out any positive emotions. Okay, got it. All right, I got it.
But you can't
the Cybermen,
reason.
There's nothing interesting going on until, and that's why this last season we had the episode with the Cybermen taking over the Doctor's brain while playing chess, and that became a little bit. Yeah. That was a little bit more interesting. That was the Neil Gaiman episode. I believe.
That was even weird for Neil Gaiman, because the Doctor's wife felt very Neil Gaiman, and this was like. Yeah. This is weird. And I still say, I've said it before and I'll say it again, if Neil Gaiman can write two episodes, Grant Morrison can write one Doctor Who.
That would make no sense.
I know! But tell me you don't want to watch it.
I don't. I want to watch it, but it's not going to make any sense.
Yeah, you know, you can imagine the message board arguments about that. Everything he writes, man. They're just arguments. And a whole audience that doesn't know who Grant Morrison is.
Trying to deal with that?
Yeah, that just turns on their TV and goes, written by Grant Morrison. I don't know who that guy is.
Yeah.
Like, comic fans, like, when we learn Grant Morrison is doing Batman, we go, okay.
Yeah. Get ready.
Strap yourself in.
Yeah. Yeah,
I want to go to Chicago TARDIS after the Grant Morrison episode shows up, because those people are going to freak.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Those people are the dying
and
guys.
And the plot point doesn't make any sense.
Why is Grant Morrison saying that all the Time Lords are actually punks from the 70s? Yes. And why is the Doctor doing mushrooms and climbing a mountain?
Yeah. Don't worry, we'll just reboot the timeline in the next episode. Yeah. It'll all be gone.
Okay, so before we get to Greatest Thing in the World, because we've been talking for a while, Steven had a chance to meet zombies.
Oh, yeah. Me and it was supposed to be a bigger group of us, but it ended up only being four of us. We did a zombie 5K through a, whatchamacallit? It's like a dirt bike track. And it's outdoors, it's in the mud, it's hills, it's there's no pavement and whatever. You're literally running through the forest at some point, and throughout the 5K there's different obstacles they set up where you have to climb over stuff or swim through like a pool or crawl under a barbed wire like fence with mud. They've got zombies set up, and so it's actual people done up in like professional movie level quality zombie, you know, makeup. And you know, they just kind of, you get the few that kind of stumble around and try to grab like you've got like a belt of it's like flag football, so you got like three flags and that's supposed to be like your life. Every time you get, they grab one, you lose a life. And I don't like 5Ks typically because it's just running for an extended amount of time, and that seems kind of pointless.
I get tired driving 5Ks.
Right, exactly.
But when zombies are chasing
but
you.
When, exactly, there's some motivation I can get behind. So, it was supposed to be a bunch of us from the shop we were going to go, and we were all going to get up and get in like superhero costumes and dress up like the Avengers and go. And then one guy hurt his knee, the other guy hurt his neck, you know, another guy couldn't get the time off, another guy waited too long to get the tickets. So it ended up just being the four of us. So it was me, Carm, Stu, and then this other guy, Chris, from the shop. And we were dressed up as Captain Marvel, Thor, Captain America, and Spider-Man. And we were running through this thing. And it was pretty cool. It's a lot of fun.
I would have a problem dressing up as a superhero who can fly and then running 5K.
Right.
In my mind, I'd always be going, I just fly over this
just
shit.
Fly away from this. Well, you know, sticking with, you know, the Avengers. It's solidarity.
Yeah. I would pick a non-flying guy.
Yeah, well, we saw, like, so all these zombies are, some of them are just straight up people dressed as zombies. Other times we were seeing, you know, Princess Leia as a zombie. We saw Spider-Man zombie. You know, you see different people kind of going at it. And then in the big groups of zombies that you have to run through is usually, like, one or two runners that are hidden. So, like, you can't tell the difference because they're all zombies, but some of them are actually going to chase you, and that's typically where you lose most of the flags. But it's pretty cool. I guess they've been doing it for a couple of years. My brother, He did it this year. He did it last year. There's like an electric fence.
But he didn't do it with you? He wasn't in your group?
He would. He did an earlier wave because they send it out in waves of people, you know, waves of survivors.
Oh, so it was all the same day, but he was like ahead of you the whole time.
Yeah, he was at like a 10:30 wave and we went at 12:30. But it's pretty cool. We're going to try to do it every year, I think. We're going to try to get, you know, a bigger, bigger group every year. But it was a lot of fun. It was actually really interesting. And it is a lot more motivation to keep running. It got to the point where I know the difference between reality and fake people dressed up as zombies. And right in the first leg of the race, like, we're just getting started and we're running downhill and it's the first big group of zombies. And we're running downhill and I tripped and fell. And one of the guys we were with, his dad was trying to get photos of everything. And he said I was down and up so fast he couldn't even get a picture off. And Stu said it was like the coolest thing he's ever seen. Where I was running downhill through a group of zombies, lost my footing because I was going too fast, rolled, and then kept my momentum, got back up in the roll, and then kept running. And the other guy we were with, Chris.
Like Sonic.
Yeah, like Sonic.
You're a hedgehog.
The other guy, Chris, because he was a Spider-Man, he thought I was trying to do some kind of like acrobatic shit. Like he thought I was trying to like do a move. And I'm like, Chris, like I'm all fucked up. Like my elbow was all messed up. I had this huge gash on my side that finally healed. It's like I was bleeding through my shirt. That's how bad I was hurt. I'm like, I wasn't playing a game or whatever. I was fucking hurt. I fell. Well, what you're supposed to do if you get hurt is you just kind of like make a cross with your hands and stop, and then somebody will come over and check on you. Well, I was so convinced I was going to get killed in the first leg of the race and they were going to take all my flags that instead of just falling and just laying there and making sure I wasn't like didn't break a leg, I just kept up and kept running. So I'm like, they're going to fucking get me. And I just like went
that
nuts.
Is good knowledge to know about yourself.
Yeah.
You know, if I get hurt, I'm going to push through.
I'm just going to push through. And like, so you run down the hill and I didn't stop until I run you. It was like you get down the hill, you run through like a big sewer drain, and then around the corner is like the barbed wire like pool you got to crawl through. And it wasn't until I got through the sewer drain that I wasn't sure they weren't chasing me that I looked. I'm like, okay, I'm all right. And then like, why is my side wet? And it's like bleed, like blood through the shirt. And I'm
that
like, this is ridiculous.
That happened to me once when I get hit by my car on my skateboard.
Oof.
Yeah, but I was like 24.
Yeah. Well, I'm 20. I'm 26.
I was like, ah!
I'm invincible.
Yeah. But it was interesting, so that was a lot of fun.
The greatest thing in the world.
This week. This week for me was not a book or a movie, which is weird. It's a figure that I was on the fence about for the last couple of months. Sideshow, I've been collecting their 12-inch figures for years. You guys see them every week in the studio. I have Indiana Jones and a lot of the superhero movies, and then, of course, the Hot Toy stuff. But they started doing comic book versions of DC characters. And the first one's not even Batman. The first one was Joker. And I saw the pictures. I was like, I don't know. It doesn't really look like anything. You know, the other Jokers I have are Jack Nicholson, Heath Ledger. You know, they look just like them.
Yeah.
And I was like, and thankfully, after 3 years, I got a full-time job. Again, I've been freelancing.
Congratulations,
forever. Thank you. Which is also why I'm not editing these as much as I used to.
We've been busy.
Oh, I used to have 7 hours to go. That joke didn't work. So I was like, I'll take the plunge and I'll just get this figure because I love Batman. And he looked okay from the pictures, but once I got him out of the box, he is gorgeous. And I think each one of you guys noticed when you came in.
Yeah.
And the nicest thing about him, he's the classic look, you know, with the green hair and the tails, but he also has a separate overcoat. And a separate head with a hat, so that, which is kind of how I had him set up. He's looking incredibly sinister, and he actually holds his own next to Hot Toy stuff. Like when you look at the shelf, you can see actually when Bill came over last night, he was like, "There's a lot of Jokers," but you can see Heath Ledger, Jack Nicholson, comic books. So I was so impressed that I pre-ordered the next two, which are Harley Quinn and Catwoman. And I think I'm going to get the Batman characters at least. Now, I'll probably skip Superman.
And these aren't really based on anyone's particular. I mean, this one's kind of Bolland-ish.
Yeah, they say it's based on multiple sources, including Bolland's Killing Joke.
Yeah.
And I can see it, but honestly, it looks like artist interpretation. It looks like the sculptors aside are like, oh, finally, I don't have to do an exact likeness. I can do my own design.
Okay.
And so far, they've looked pretty good. I'm not crazy about the Batman. And I'm kind of hoping they tweak it before it comes out. So right now I have the Metacom Batman, which is like the Jim Lee version. And if the Batman doesn't look better than that, I'm going to skip him. But I would you know, I don't want to have all the Batman villains and not have the Batman.
Right.
But they've been really interesting. And you, with 12-inch figures, I'm usually a stickler for accuracy.
Yeah.
And this is where I can just totally let it go.
You don't have to worry about it. Yeah.
Yeah. Joe?
Mine is a book that I never thought I'd like. And in fact, I bought the first issue by mistake. And that is Superior Foes of Spider-Man.
Oh, yeah.
And it's these B-list villains like, you know, Shocker and things like that. And they kind of get together. It's like,
don't make fun of Shocker. He's awesome. His costume is padded so he doesn't shock himself.
Right.
That's forethought.
Awesome. It's practical. Yeah.
He's got forethought.
John Romita Sr.
But, you know, they kind of almost like come out of retirement or they kind of get back together again. And now
like
they're
the monkeys?
Like yeah, exactly. Ocean's 13?
Yeah.
Yeah.
For the money? It's like, literally?
It's like the Spider-Man version of Ocean's 13, only they're like, you know, they're not terribly competent.
They're all idiots. They're all idiots. And it's like, none of them are good looking.
No, and they hang around this dive bar trying to plot their schemes and they go out and fail. I mean, yeah. It recaptures the fun of some of the Spider-Man. I mean, Doc Ock as Superior Spider-Man is funny in his own way that's different from Peter Parker as Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. But these guys go back to like the Peter Parker humor. It's like they're wisecracking and stuff like that. But
yeah,
they're almost like they've taken over the lovable loser function
absolutely.
That Parker had.
It's kind of adorable. They're all past their primes. Like they call themselves the Sinister Six, but there's only five of them. So then they argue about like, is there a sixth member? And they're like, no, but no one knows that, so look, they'll be looking in the fight for the sixth guy and they'll throw them off their game. Like one of them brags about getting into like escaping from like a Punisher hit and he's like survived the Punisher hit, so he's like the
but
badass.
He really wussed out,
right? Yeah. So it's like it's cool stuff like that where it's one of the few books, it might be one of the only books Marvel's doing right now that's actually it's a straight up comedy book. It's not action. There's you know, there's a story arc, but it's mostly based on, hey, let's just, what's it like to be the Boomerang and team up with Shocker?
And it's ongoing or limited?
I think it's ongoing. Yeah,
it's ongoing.
I imagine at some point it'll get canceled like any other book that's not a major title. Yeah. But it's great. It sells out. Like we've sold out of almost every issue, but it's really good. It's a good book.
That reminds me of a joke that Bill and I would tell each other in college all the time. We would talk about comics. And Bill, we've never talked about comics with you on the show, but I know you were a big comics reader. You're not a current comics reader.
Oh, I used to get my monthly box from Mile High Comics. Every month in the late 80s.
Yeah, but we used to talk. I think we were on the phone last night, back when people would call each other on the phone and talk for an hour because we're that old. But we're saying how in Batman it's always like the villain's a psychopath and he's got this horrible plan to kill everyone and he's got a girl in his basement and he's beating her with a tire iron. And it's like, and every issue of Spider-Man, it's just some guy
smashing up the city.
Yeah. It's like, that's it. It's like, what's Rhonda doing? He's smashing up the city.
Yeah.
Spider-Man's swinging around the city and goes, hey, look at those buildings falling down. Hey, you stop it.
Right.
It's like, and you're in a Spider-Man story. That's all the motivation you need.
Yeah.
And the great thing about this, these are just guys trying to make a buck dishonestly.
Yeah. You know? And it's like some, they're not like terrible guys. They're not good guys.
Right.
But they're not like psychopaths. Right. I mean, Boomerang's just a jerk who wants an easy buck.
Right.
And it's like, I can kind of sympathize with that. I feel like sometimes I'm a jerk that wants to be a buck. So it's like, you know, it's the book I can relate to.
I love you, Boomerang.
Right.
All right, for me, I'm going to have to go with a book I'm just about a third of the way into, and that's a book called The Forever War by John Haldeman. And what it is, it's a novel about, based on the author's experience in Vietnam, but set in the future, where basically the Earthlings are in war with the Taurans, and they have to jump through different aspects of the galaxy, through stargates, etc. But what's really interesting about it, well, there's a couple of things really interesting about it. For one thing, they incorporate relativity into the book. Now, they don't get into a physics discussion about it, but they do talk about the time distortion that happens with relativity. So you can serve for 2 years, and in reality, in your frame of reference, you've been at war for 27 years and exploring with that. And as it's told from the perspective of these grunts, these space marines that aren't the tough guys like in Doom and in video games and a lot of those types of things, but just frontline soldiers who don't really know really why they're fighting.
They don't really want to be there.
They don't really want to be there, but they have no choice. And, you know, a lot of what they deal with is, you know, getting people getting killed in training and just the hassles of just dealing with all this. And it's a really interesting look at you know, future space sci-fi combat from an enemy we don't know anything about, while providing some commentary about about what Haldeman's experience in Vietnam. And I think it's really worth reading. It's really keeping me going.
Yeah, it sounds awesome.
How many books are in the series?
It's one novel.
Oh, it's only one book. Okay.
I think there are other novels that are sort of inspired by that. I know John Scalzi has some novels that a lot of people see a lot of familiarity with in Haldeman's
stuff.
But
it stands alone.
It's a standalone book.
You know, people like me with short attention spans can read it.
There you go. Yeah.
Well, it's about 300 pages, so.
Oh, God.
I can do 300 pages, but I think when I see a book and it's a series and it's like, it's like, do I really have like the emotional time?
Dune.
Like Dune, exactly. I'll never read Dune because it's like, how many fucking volumes do I need? I stopped reading The Foundation because I found out there's more books. And I'm just like no, fuck this. I don't have the time for this.
Did you ever do Harry Potter?
That I did. But that was easy because I'd seen the movies. I'm like, all right, I'll check these out. And they're quicker reads, I think.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah.
Mine would be, and it's only because I'm still feeling the effects, is open bars at weddings are awesome. And
there's some sad video evidence of open bars at weddings.
And my wedding. There is Bill's job at my wedding, which is here in Chicago, was to have, we got a handheld video camera. So we made awesome sketches across country.
Right.
So like we went to Mount Rushmore and we did sketches in front of Mount Rushmore and like we did stuff in the car. And when we got to the reception, I go, well, we didn't hire a videographer, so you're going to be the videographer. And when I got the tape back, there was 20 minutes of the camera pointing at the floor and Bill going, well, this wedding's pretty good. Did you try, what champagne is it?
You know, we sort of set a goal of reducing, of since it was a flat fee open bar that they paid, we wanted to make sure that we reduced the cost per drink metric as much as possible.
Right.
Yeah, to where it was 10 cents a drink.
Right.
Yeah, we made the mistake of handing out those Instamatic cameras.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, every camera we got back, the first four or five pictures were good. Then you started getting pictures of the ceiling. Pictures that are, like, you know, like tilted 45 degrees. They're out of focus. Like, what
the hell
is this?
They did that at my cousin's wedding a couple years ago, and everyone's just running around, like, flat. Flashing each other in the eye with them. And it's like, because it's like it was a bunch of fucking, you know, 20-year-olds, like a bunch of ass clowns running around, right?
So every picture, somebody looked like someone caught in a stampede.
Right.
They're like,
somebody's like, I, you know?
At work one time, we were giving away premiums in retail stores. For the company I rep for, and the premiums we were giving away were these pens, which were in baseball bats, and so they were like these 12-inch long wooden baseball bats. We got in trouble with the store manager when his salespeople started beating each other with these bat
pens.
Oh,
yeah. Oh, of course. Yeah.
Yeah.
Any kind of weapon you put in. I mean, we did it with those Artifacts lightsabers that came out.
Oh, yeah.
And we, you know what? I hung those up in the store. When we ordered them, we said, we're going to sell these. We're not going to play with them. They were on the shelf for 6 months, didn't sell. Me and Doug took them out into LaGrange on the sidewalk and had a lightsaber battle during the Smallville season finale party. And the next day, I sold both of them because some kid saw us playing with them outside because they light up and
stuff.
I think
we talked about this. We brought it into the bar. We brought it to the clubhouse and started swinging them around, and the bartender threw his dish rag down and yelled, "You Star Trek nerds have ruined Christmas for the last time!"
That's priceless.
As always, you can follow me at Not In My Book. That is the only Twitter feed for Caffeinated Comics. Check us out on Facebook. We're starting to post more stuff, like when news happens. On Facebook, we're posting directly. There are some great customs from Stu from our HeroClix podcast up there. You can see them there. I think that's where we're going to do it rather than the main site. So be sure to like us there. Bill, Twitter.
You can follow me on a Twitter feed that I haven't updated since I live tweeted the Super Bowl commercials at Cromely, Cromely, and on a rarely updated blog, which is turned into mainly my book reviews at this point, and that's at cromely.net.
Yeah, my blog is mostly turned into promoting the podcast. Because we're in social media. Blogs, like, unless you're a journalist, the day of the blog is kind of...
Well, it all depends on the length of the content that you want to produce. And,
right.
I think Facebook has taken over for some of the shorter form or some of the more private, long form type of stuff.
And, and Twitter for just jokes and links.
Right.
And Joe, do you want to...
And I am a Zen Master Guy on Twitter. Zen Master Guy all run together as one word.
Okay. And I'm always at 19 South LaGrange Road in LaGrange, Illinois.
And by his own admission, shop at Chimera Comics because Steven is a jerk that wants an easy buck.
Yes.
Caffeinated Comics is a Not In My Book production.
Take that!